The first question is always the hardest. So hopefully one of you will have a question, get started, and then we'll start rocking and rolling. Okay, who has the first question? Anybody? Yes, thanks, please.
Just in general, with where we're at in the world right now, with technology and the shift of AI, what's your stance on that? How would you recommend using that? How would you recommend implementing that in your business?
Sure. A very common question, right? Everybody wants to know do we implement AI specifically? Because technology has been around even before I started in technology in 92. And so, believe it or not, first of all, regardless of technology, the same things that make you successful today made people successful 100 years ago. The same exact behaviors that made people successful 100 years ago are the same behaviors that made people successful today. So it is behavioral. Now, with AI specifically, what AI does is it changes a face of knowledge. So when we were young, everybody used to say knowledge is power. So you went to school, you went to graduate school, you did all of these things to gain knowledge, to get this power. But what has happened with AI and technology today is knowledge is a commodity. You know, if you know how to search, a five-year-old could have at its hands more knowledge than anybody that graduated law school, business school, and any PhD program instantly. And it could actually utilize that knowledge. So what is important is to know that behaviors are important, because the way behaviors work is our thoughts turn into perspective. Our perspective gives us meaning, and we have the power to give meaning to what we see. The meaning that we have creates behaviors, and it's the behaviors that create your results. Even though people lie to themselves and tell you that their behaviors are aligned with their divine direction, they're probably lying to themselves. They're probably what I call extra milers. They're probably going the extra mile every once in a while, and then they use that for an excuse why they're not where they want to be or better. Whether it was Napoleon Hill 100 years ago or Carnegie, Ford, what did they all teach, right? Devotional behavior, discipline of consistent, persistent pursuit of their potential, of mindset, heartset, and handset, right? They controlled their thoughts, which controlled their perception, which gave them meaning, which gave them behaviors, and then they were completely devotional about those behaviors aligned with where they want to be or better. So if knowledge is a commodity, what becomes the greatest asset at your hands to utilize technology? Because knowledge is a commodity. Anybody can answer any question. It's like a calculator times a billion, right? Anybody could have done 2 sine to the 3rd power. Anybody that knew the buttons could do that when I was a kid, and it was remarkable. That's bullshit. I mean, so easy today. So what's the real thing we're seeking? Wisdom and faith. See, knowledge is a commodity. Wisdom and faith are not. Wisdom and faith will be the two things that separate people that are using the incredible access that they have to the Akashic Records, this AI, this huge knowledge base that now has made and commoditized information, data, and knowledge. So those people who, believe it or not, were successful 100 years ago, what did they have? They sought wisdom and faith. Why is faith so? Wisdom's probably obvious, right? That we want to have the experience on how to apply, align, supplementally utilize what's doing well, what's stable, and what you think is doing well. That's wisdom. But faith is the most interesting one, and it is applicable to whatever religion, philosophy, spirituality you subscribe to. Because faith will shorten that distance of resistance, because in the continuum of time, what happens when we have the right behaviors is the only thing that will stop us or make us want to quit when we do the right behaviors or aligned behaviors, I call them, aligned with your divine direction of what you want or better, is that it is the lapse of time between your behavior and the results or better and the understanding of or better. So let me give you an example. Most of the time, you have all these great behaviors, but the evidence today, even though you've been doing these behaviors, the evidence today is non-existent that you're ever going to get to where you want to be. Or worse and more common, the evidence today is contrary to where you want to be, but yet you're still doing the behaviors, right? You're still improving on those. And you're like, what the fuck? How's it? Well, that's where faith comes in. those people that are constantly seeking wisdom will shorten the distance of resistance. But if they don't have faith, then what's going to happen is they're going to allow the evidence or the circumstances of the day dictate the behaviors of tomorrow. And then they're never going to get to where they want to be or better. Everything happens very slowly, then all of a sudden. It's so difficult to continue to do things if you don't see results. But that's how things work. You got to keep doing, saying, thinking, feeling, and believing, even though there's no evidence or the evidence is contrary to where you want to be. And that requires faith. I simplify faith for you and for other people is just somehow subscribe religiously, philosophically, theoretically to the idea that there's something bigger than you that loves you more than your mom. So here's another analogy just real quick before I take the next question. Is everybody in here, or most of us are parents in some way, right? So we're parents. As a parent, I'm a parent of four, I give to my kids advice and try to protect them, promote them, love and perfect them, right? That's what we try to do as parents. I'm trying to perfect my kids, promote my kids, protect my kids, and love my kids. I'm not omniscient, so I don't know what I don't know. So because I want to protect them, promote them, love and perfect them, I just make up shit as if I know it and give them advice, like go to college, study this, do this, you know. Meanwhile, I don't know what, that'd be impossible. It's so uncertain. I'll give you an example because I talk about being humble or you're about to be humble. I try to hold back from giving answers or advice. I just give right suggestions and questions to my kids. But my daughter was buying her first property and comes to me, Dad, should I lock in my loan? And dumbass, right, who doesn't know what he doesn't know, who lost over $100 million in real estate and has owned tons of real estate, what do I say to her? Don't lock in now. Interest rates are going down. Everything to me seemed to point that interest rates were going down, except for dumbass goes to war. And all of a sudden, interest rates go way up. And here I am again. So here's the analogy, though. God, your God, not my God, your God, whoever is bigger than you that loves you more than your mom, actually knows everything. And they're not afraid, because they know everything, of putting things in front of you so that you get to where you want to be or better. You know how hard it is and difficult as a parent to actually cause struggle and pain and setback and failure to your kid so that they get to where they want to be or better? It's almost impossible. Like for me, at least, and I get this shit, right? But it's not for God. Because God, your God, loves you more than your mom and knows way more, knows everything. So when you have this faith that, oh, I'm okay. I don't see how losing everything over $100 million, including my mom's house, is going to get me to make more money, help more people, and have more fun, and live this amazing life instead of continually partying, using drugs, dying, or getting divorced. I didn't see it. Somebody would have told me, you are so lucky, bro. The day after, I was sitting there depressed in my bed after losing my mom's house and over $100 million. Man, you are so blessed to be so promoted and protected, loved and perfected. You know, I just can't wait to see where you go now. That line of people was extremely short. It was one. It was my mom. Why? Because she loved, protects, promotes, right? And what'd she say to me when I told her I don't believe in God? She's like, oh, you believe in God, just the wrong God. And when I told her, why does God punish me? What did she say? God doesn't punish. He promotes, protects, loves, and perfects you. You got to figure this out, son, on your own. She didn't wish it on me, and she would never have done it to me, but she was wise enough and had enough faith to know that this was going to be good for me. Even though she was going to be evicted from her home, she still took the position to me, this is good for you. I'm here to help you. I love you, I'm proud of you, and I always have your back, which is what I tell my kids every single day, which is why every single day, even when my mom passed, I tell her I'm happy, I'm healthy, I love you and appreciate you forever. But if you just start taking yourself into witness consciousness and say, I get it. Circumstances aren't really showing anybody, especially me, that all this behavior is going to get me to where I want to be or better. But I'm seeking wisdom from people that are already there, and they're telling me that's how they got there. And two, I have faith that God would not put anything in front of me that is not protecting, promoting love, and perfecting me. And yes, he doesn't promise there's going to be no struggle, pain, setbacks, failures. There's no promise in any Bible that God says, I will make sure that your life is easy all the time. He says, no, I will give you the strength to take the dis-easy, dissipate it, dissolve it, and disappear it into easy, into inspiration, utilizing the infinite amount of intelligence, intuition, energy, and inspiration that you're part of. You were built in my image, and I will strengthen you to live up to that image, to walk like, if you believe in Jesus or your higher self, as much as you can, as many minutes as you can in the 24 hours that I guarantee you every day of your life, except for the last day of your life, I will cheat you. Yes, sir.
Your thought on the British banish, because you're talking about children.
Yeah.
I've got four grandsons. The ban on the internet and AI at 16 years old.
Till they're 16.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, in my opinion, right, banning things is never the solution, right? Educating and empowering people is the solution. There's every way around age limits to everything, and anyone that's lived long enough knows that I've never seen one age limit ever been able to be enforced. Problem is, most people think that if we create these regulations, these limitations, that it's going to help, but it actually doesn't. And if you read, you know, Dr. David Hawkins' Power Versus Force, every force like that creates a counterforce. So what I would rather do, you know, early in 92, I was on the board for the Child Safe Internet, and the internet was so slow, so crappy, monochrome screens, and they're already worried about kids on the internet. And putting age limits, how many kids you think go on Pornhub just because it says you need to be over 18 and check a box? And how many millions of dollars were spent to create that regulation that some 16-year-old has to lie and check a box that I'm 18 so that they can cover their ass that they now have required someone to be 18 years old? How many kids can still buy liquor even though they're under 21? In the United States, probably any kid that wants to buy liquor can buy liquor. How many kids could buy weed when it was illegal? It doesn't work. Bans don't work. Education and empowerment works. Allowing somebody to use AI appropriately, because there are no lazy children, there's lazy parents. And they're not willing to do the work to say, look, there's an appropriate way to use this. Thoughts become perception, perception meaning, meaning becomes behavior. And if your thoughts are not correct because you're not using AI to enhance those thoughts, to make humans more human, to allow you to be more efficient, effective. So I'm teaching my kids all the time, what are the benefits of this? And what do you want out of it? Heroin. Let's take heroin because it's a little bit even more straightforward on we should maybe have bans on heroin. Sounds good, right? And very few people on earth would say, no, we shouldn't ban heroin. But even in heroin use, people still use heroin, right? And they start with opiates and then they can't get those prescribed to them anymore because the doctor, and so they move on and somehow there's a shitload of heroin in the United States still. Even though every person I've ever run into said, would you like to ban heroin from the United States? They all say, yeah, that's a good idea. No shit. But you know what's a better idea? Is to sit down with your kids and say, hey, there's heroin available in the United States. I will tell you from my experience that I've never met anyone who tried heroin that isn't completely fucked up or dead. I've never met one person like, bro, I tried heroin. And they're like a normal dude that's like, they're completely fucked up from heroin. even if they're functioning, they're like one day away from using heroin again and overdosing or killing themselves. Or a lot of them end up dead anyway. This is just the truth about heroin. And so I tell my kids, hey, I've been around more people than most people, and I've never met anybody who told me they tried heroin that isn't either really fucked up or dead. So I just want to let you know, this is your life, which I help to allow you to be here. And I'm supportive of you. I love you. I'm proud of you. I have your back. But if you decide to do heroin, before you decide, remind yourself that your dad, who knows millions of people, has never met one who's tried it and is not completely fucked up or dead. So the chances are that if you use it, chances are you'll probably end up in the same situation as every person I've ever met. Good luck. I don't tell them not to do heroin, do I? I don't tell them if you do heroin, you're guaranteed to die. There's no fear at all. It's just, this has been my experience. And so we as mentors, teachers, and coaches, which is what parenting is about, right? Mentoring, giving them instructions to get to where you are today or where they want to be or better, teaching them the steps to get there, and coaching them is bringing the best out of them. And we do that by giving them suggestions and questions, not telling them or banning them. I always say for my wife, who some of you know, who will completely confirm that I've outkicked my coverage, both in inside and out. This woman's amazing. But one of the things looking back about it was when I was really messed up and she was going to leave me, and I told her, I'm taking stock in who I was. I'm going to do all the right things. She didn't say, if I catch you drinking ever again, if I catch you using drugs ever again, if I catch you going to a strip club ever again, which was part of my job. I know culturally this is Las Vegas. Lester would tell you he knew me at Lee Steinberg. It was part of my job. I could not do my job if I wasn't in the strip clubs here. I wouldn't be the top sports agency in the world if I didn't host people at, and that's including business people. It was just the way it was way long ago. But my wife didn't say that to me. She said, as long as you try, and I see that you try, we'll be good. As long as I know you're trying, I know you put your mind to it, you'll achieve it. I know you will. But if I see you bullshitting me, being an extra miler, not the empty miler that you need to be, and using that to justify why you're doing the same shit, I'm out of here immediately. That's the same thing I do in parenting, right? Do your best, learn lessons, and have fun. And I'm here for you. I love you, I'm proud of you, and I have your back. That all fits together. And so anything I believe that's banned, regulated, is cheating you as a parent and us as a society. Great question. All right, next question. Hi, Marianne. Marianne looks behind her.
Oh, me.
Yeah, hi. Do you have a question? Oh, you raise your hand.
So,
good.
So,
you see that?
Yeah.
I should do that in an auction. Hi. Sold. Sold $5,000, the red bed. Vibroacoustic lounge.
Kind of like a wine when you said,
I was trying to be subtle.
I know. So when you're in that state that you're talking about, like, you know, you keep going, and you're like, you know, waiting for it. You just keep going?
I don't wait for it. So, right? There's no attachment to the results. Right? I'm focusing on my thoughts, perceptions, meaning, and behaviors. And so I'm categorizing behaviors as aligned with my divine direction or interfering with it. And I'm trying to, when it's interfering with it, shorten the distance or resistance through wisdom and faith, using time to quantify how well I'm doing. And that's where the non-negotiable behaviors, and they've really evolved over these years. 90% of progress comes from non-negotiable behaviors because you're presetting your divine direction. No matter what the circumstances are, this is how much time I'm assigning to sleep. No matter what the circumstances are, this amount of time I'm assigning to my family every day, my faith, my finance, the study of time and the study of relativity, and I have it to about 12 hours, with the majority of it being sleep. Now, I know there's 12 hours of awake time that I have circumstances arise, and now I know that my job is not only to prioritize by what's important to me, but shorten the distance of resistance in that 12 hours. So if I have a need to be right, offended, separate, inferior, superior, anxious, frustrated, angry, guilty, resentful, I stop, I drop, remind, remember, and recollect with God, be at ease, and roll back into my divine direction. So I have fear every single day. I get pissed every day. I get worried every single day. I just do it for less time than most people. Minutes and moments is spent in interference between me and my divine direction. And I keep getting better at it because those behaviors aggregate and accelerate and compound with these results. And when you attach to the results as well, not only won't the evidence align with where you want to be or better, but the results aren't going to equate to better, even though they are better. See, what people really want is, I want to behave in this way and get exactly what I want, even though they don't understand what they want. So that's why I tell people, say, this is what I think I want or better, and you're going to end up getting there a lot quicker. I would say attachment to outcomes is one of the biggest difficulties that most people have, especially in an entrepreneurial journey. When I hear, I'll be happy when, this isn't happening, I'm like, hold on, let's readjust. I want to know your thoughts. I want to know your perception of this. I want to know the meaning that you're giving this. And I want to know the behaviors that you have, and are those aligned with your divine direction or better or not? I don't want to hear the results. I'll be happy when, blah, blah. You're just going to create resistance.
So when, I feel like I'm consistently, like weekly, noticing gaps, and I'm constantly now changing my calendar.
Okay.
Like, I'm just saying, it's like, because I'm like, oh, well, I'm spending too much time here, or I'm doing this. And it just keeps refining and refining, and I feel like it's a weekly pattern.
I've been doing it like 20 years, and okay. I still am refining and refining and refining. You know, in on my non-negotiable sides, I'm pretty set. I'm just changing the amount of minimum time that I spend. And so sleep has got a lot more time than it used to. Family has more time than it used to. Faith has a lot more time than it used to. The study of time and the study of relativity or meaning of that time. And finance has less. And then the circumstantial behavior is 12 hours of my day. 90% of the results, though, are from the non-negotiable behavior, because I'm in complete control of what other people can't control, which is uncertainty. I am certain of what my activities are 12 hours a day, regardless of circumstance. Imagine how much productivity, accessibility, and gratitude comes from that. But people, human nature doesn't want you to be consistent. Human nature hates two things, right? I always say I'm a great leader because I'm annoying. Because I'm really good at two things that annoy the shit out of my kids, the people who work for me, my wife. I am repetitive and I'm honest. And guess what human beings hate? Repetitive and honest. And I'm repetitive and honest with myself. And so that could actually create self-loathing, just understanding human nature and human behavior. But I'm okay with it because I know that's what creates what people want or better. If I can get you to have non-negotiable, consistent, everyday, persistent, without quit, pursuit of your divine direction, your potential, you'll get there faster than anyone else, or better. We just don't know what or better means, so we have to have faith that, although I don't understand the evidence today or the evidence contrary to where I think I want to be, that it's actually better. Because why? Because God is like a parent that knows everything and is not afraid to put struggles, setbacks, failures, and mistakes in front of you to make you better. Where real parents are opposite. Most parents are way too afraid to put struggle. When you meet some of these kids that are super successful and they start telling you, well, my dad made me do this, my mom made me do this. You know, the things that piss me off about my mom are what made me most successful. Number one, 7 days a week, I had to wake up at 5 a.m. My mom, all six kids, 5 a.m., 7 days a week. And I did not like it. But I also got freedom, right? Friday, Saturday night, Stay out as late as you want, honey, but I'm gonna wake you up at 5 a.m. Well, when you're waking up at 5 a.m. for that many days in a row, you can't stay out late, or you're sleeping on the couch at the party and they're writing names in marker on your forehead. Trust me, that's personal experience. It's hard to get in trouble when your mom wakes you up at 5 a.m. And it's also hard not to be productive when your mom wakes you up at 5 a.m. every day of your childhood. And then you go and you say, oh, I've been protected, promoted, loved, and perfected, and not punished like I thought when I was 16. Why is mom punishing me? Same thing as people say, why is God punishing me? I lost everything. Why is God punishing me? He's not punishing you. He's omniscient. He's just literally protecting you, and you're too stupid to understand it, just like a 16-year-old. Too stupid to understand my mom was protecting me by waking me up and preparing me and perfecting me by waking me up every single day. All right, next question. Anyone? Anyone shy? No one wants to? Thank you, Lori.
So, we all make mistakes.
Every day.
So, when people say to you, Dave, how do you, because I know what, so thank you, as you're my teacher, is minutes to moments. I don't let it go for days. I was like, God, this thing, it's haunting me. I can't get out of my own, you know, how do you help people realize the mistakes and opportunity? Because we all get to go down that black hole, I call it.
Yeah.
But sometimes it's hard to get out of that.
Yeah, it's interesting because the times that it's hard to get out of it is because we need to release these traumas or these past memories that we hold on to. So the idea, we don't actually have to process anything. We just have to release them. And when we aren't releasing them, then we can start to understand the clues and the patterns of what our behaviors are when things get tough or mistakes happen. Why can't we see the light, the love, and the lessons in this mistake when there's other mistakes that just go right up? But there's certain mistakes that we can't let go. And so what we want to do, and it was a great analogy I worked through with Colleen about a trauma map, right? We use clues, patterns, and the choices that we make as a map to find the trauma so that we can work on releasing the trauma. And there's multiple ways to release trauma, right? You can go to therapy and go energy work, NLP. There's a ton of different ways to release the trauma, but it is that stored memory that is causing you to make that same dumb decision or not be able to stop the interference that created by some trigger. This is just a trauma, you know, literally like a treasure map. It's a trauma map. And so what we want to do is start to truly analyze the clues and patterns and choices and then work within or get someone to help us work to what is that memory stored genetically or energetically in our quantum being, in our DNA, in our unconscious competency that causes us to do these dumb choices, to remake the mistake. Right, we built a brand called Made From Mistakes because I want to help people understand how we are made from our setbacks, failures, and mistakes in our life. But we have to be able to release them or we'll repeat them. Why? Because life's about lessons. Lessons keep on coming until you learn them. Once you learn them, it's called a solution. It's actually called a resolution. So in other words, every single mistake that you have, the solution's already there. It's what? It's just a lapse of time until it becomes a resolution. Why do you think they named it resolution? Because it was already there. They would have named it something else. They call it a resolution because it was already there. It's a resolution to the problem that keeps showing itself because you've held on to some kind of genetic or energetic inheritance of that trauma, that trigger, or that stored memory. And what makes it really complex, if you believe like I do, I believe in past lives. So it could be from a life that you haven't even remembered. So how do we do it? We remember, recollect, and remind ourselves of that trauma, even if we don't have a point of context of a lifetime or a period of time. And a lot of times, stuff happens to us and we naturally block it out. We don't even believe it happened in this lifetime. because it was so traumatic. And I've had a few of those happen to me. I was molested as a 9-year-old, didn't even like remember remotely anything until later on in life. And then I'm like, oh shit, that like really happened to me. Right? Out of fear that, like, when it happened to me, I don't remember, but for me, through the work that I've done, it was like, I did not want to hurt my mom. If I told my mom what was happening, it would have really screwed up everything for my mom. Not very good logic, but 9-year-olds in those situations, this is how they think. And then what happens? Stored memory, too harsh, block it out to protect yourself. And then doing the work, all of a sudden things are released and you're strong enough to say, oh shit, this happened to me, and deal with it and release that, so that you make what? Better clues, better patterns, better choices in your life. And everybody has different forms of it, but I promise you, everybody has severe trauma. Some sound worse than others, but remember, it's your thoughts, perception, and meaning of the trauma as well that creates the behaviors. So perception is yours. That's why, you know, entitled kids, right? They got like these first world problems, and you're sitting there going, why is she crying over that? Well, because that problem is just as big as yours to them, because thoughts create perception, perception meaning, meaning behavior, and we can't control the perception. Those are theirs. And so what do we have to do? We have to treat it the same as, you know, this person that's a United States veteran that has PTSD. You have to treat it the same as a spoiled 21-year-old that can't buy a Gucci purse because she already has 3 of them. But in perception and meaning, it's exactly the same pain as someone who has PTSD who may have witnessed 25 children dying. But it's the same. And you have to understand that and treat it the same so that they can release their Gucci trauma the same way a United States vet releases their trauma. Yeah. Awesome. All right, next question. Oh. And then Janet. Right,
so, Yaks wrote a whole book, Don't Do Business with Dicks, which I think most people would agree with. If you want to do business with people you like. When you're early on, particularly when you're investing capital, like we're in the process of doing, how do you evaluate early on? And how quickly can you evaluate if this is somebody you want to do business with or not?
Yeah, so look, determinative upon your timing and risk tolerance, you have varying degrees of who you do business with. Right? We have to compensate in certain situations. And so I use 3 criteria aligned with my timing and risk tolerance. My timing and risk tolerance when I went to work at Lee Steinberg was completely different than it is today. So I put up with a bunch of shit because it was aligned with my timing and risk tolerance in that time in my career. But utilizing 3 pieces of criteria in any situation aligned with your timing and risk tolerance. Number 1, relativity. Evaluate the relativity of the relationship and prioritize by relativity. How relative is this person? Lee Steinberg was extremely relative to my personal and professional life. My mom is extremely relative to me. The guy who I went to high school with that was on the homecoming court with me is not very relative to me anymore. Then why do I give a shit that he's talking shit when I'm 50 years old at a party about me? About something I did 30 years ago. But it does impact you if you don't start realizing, hey, this guy's not relative in my life. 2, associations. So we all belong to communities and associations, and we have to use that as a criteria is, oh, we sit on this board together, we're at church together, we're at the same business. This is an association. And we have to give it credence within the alignment of the timing and risk tolerance to evaluate whether we should do business or have a relationship that's not business with this person by relativity and association. And if we decide we should have a relationship, we can use that criteria. Like, let's say you have a brother or a sister that's a complete asshole. Well, they're really relative and there's association with them. All you do is assign less time to them. and less engagement. Now, the third one's the most important one, and it's evolved for me over the years, and it's called the feeding and bleeding criteria. And so what I used to say is, it feeds you, feed it. If it bleeds you, fire it. Not true at all. Not true at all. The question is, how much feeding am I getting from this person who is feeding and bleeding me? You know, I came to the realization when my mom got sick, I'm like, man, my mom, I told my wife, I'm like, I will do anything for her, but she is bleeding me financially, emotionally. It's bleeding me. And my wife said, yeah, the same way you bled her, which is why the greatest joy or feeding in her life is from the bleeding that you did to her. And the same will be true in this stage of your life. This bleeding period is feeding you more than you will ever realize. And when she passed, I realized what my wife was talking about. She had lost her mom at 25. And at 25, she felt her mom's cancer was bleeding her in her lifestyle, and but it was the greatest feeding still of her whole life, was being there for her mom when she was bleeding her. So if we look at relativity association and how is the feeding and bleeding feeding us, we can start prioritizing people, and then we assign time to those people accordingly. Or if it's complete waste, like a high school friend who was not relative to my life anymore, no associations with my high school anymore, and was just bleeding me. Well, that came up. Fire him from your life. No time. No time at all. Forgiveness only, no time. Pray for their happiness only, no time to that. No attention, no intention. And if you really want to get deep, ask yourself, why would it bother you that he said something bad behind your back at a party about something that happened 30 years ago when you were 28 years old? He has no association, no relativity. He's only bleeding you with no feeding at all. Why? What is it about you that's triggered because someone said something bad about you that was on the homecoming court with you when you were 28 years old? This is what we do. But this is how we learn, align with the time, and surround ourselves. The original title of that book before Simon Schuster told me none of the titles I had sell books was How to Ditch Toxicity from Your Life or Surround Yourself with Positive Influences. Those titles are about as good as Compassionate Capitalism. People are not grabbing that shit. This book, I promise you, you walk around with this book, somebody will buy it from you out of your hands just off the title. I would have sold more books if there was nothing in it with that title. The other books, people actually had to read so I could sell those books, because they'd read it and tell somebody, hey, this book will rock your world and change your life. Connected to Goodness, Compassionate Capitalism, Unstoppable, Creating the Life You Love, Game Time Decision Making. Great content, terrible titles for selling. You cannot sell a secret. Great lesson. I see too many people trying to sell a secret. You can't sell one. So you got to make sure that everybody knows about it. So put a big rocket and the name Dick and all the things that was. Awesome questions. All right, who's next? Janet, you got a question?
Going back to your comments about heroin and that you wouldn't necessarily tell your kids not to use heroin, but you would do it a different way, which obviously sounded horrible. Now, my question is, what types of boundaries do you put in place with people in your circle who are exhibiting like destructive behavior without coming right out and saying, don't do that, or stop, or else, ooh, or whatever fear kicks in?
Yeah.
What are your boundaries, or what kinds of boundaries do you put in place to curb bad behavior?
So first of all, every single thing that I have created, a framework, these criteria, all the things, they all are subject to my performance. Even my non-negotiable behavior, I make exceptions. And then when I fail to sleep a minimum of 7 hours, I give it super priority the next day. And so I try to do these things the best that I can. I try to use questions and suggestions when behaviors are not aligned, especially with my children or my employees. Sometimes I don't have time, or enlightenment to sit down and say, hey, you know, it's been my experience and tell me about. No, I just like stop. Now, especially raising children, there's caution as well. So if your 2-year-old is running towards the pool, you are not going to say, hey, let me have a suggestion. Like Mike's 2-year-old, who's humongous, I think he's my size. I saw a video of him. He stood on the wall of the pool, knowing that he couldn't swim, and just jumped into the water and didn't even try to save himself, just waited at the bottom of the pool for Mike to save him. So yes, you got to set boundaries according to common sense and time. And so I try my best to give questions and suggestions, but I'm human and I'm reactory and I get mad. But my biggest thing is to recognize when I have a need to be right, offended, separate, inferior, superior, anxious, frustrated, angry, guilty, and resentful, and worried, that I'm shortening the amount of time it takes just to stop and breathe, remind, remember, and recollect with God, and then align back into what is it I really want today? Is this categorized as aligned with my divine direction or is it interfering with it? Who can I help and who can help me? How best can I get that done? And then reprioritize the time that I would have wasted worrying, being resentful, separate, inferior, superior, anxious, frustrated, and angry, which happened every single day. Because remember, it's natural, those things, because first of all, uncertainty creates fear. If you want to realize there's nothing but uncertainty. So anybody tells you, oh, I can overcome fear, bullshit, and you can't overcome uncertainty. You can take control by having non-negotiable behaviors. But if you realize the spectrum of how this works is that, so uncertainty creates fear. There's uncertainty all the time. So then there's fear, and then we react to fear, and the ego is what reacts to fear. And what it's trying to do is just 3 things all the time. So uncertainty, I'm afraid. Now I'm either defending myself from the very beginning, right? Defending my body, my thoughts, or the perception of self. Or I'm trying to take control of the uncontrollable. Right? That's what the ego's shit's out of control. I'm going to take control. So these are the behaviors that allow me to take control or prove myself. I'm going to prove I'm better than my dad. I'm going to prove to my parents that I don't need their shit. I'm going to prove that I can do this or that I can prove that I'm, that's just the ego. That's all ego. So I'm always trying to catch myself when I'm defending, when I'm proving, and I'm trying to get control, knowing that there's uncertainty. How do I respond to the fear after the natural reaction to prove control and defend myself? And that practice has helped me more than anything, that, and also saved me a ton of money in therapy, because therapists will keep on going around and around trying to tell you what you're afraid of. I don't give a shit what I'm afraid of. I know naturally what I'm afraid of, uncertainty. And I have trauma that I need to release. Memories that are genetically and energetically inherited. So my primary focus is, okay, when I see the clues and the patterns of how I'm reacting to fear, the need to be right is a pattern, the need to be separate, inferior, superior, anxious, frustrated, angry, guilty, resentful, and worried. These are patterns of how I respond to the uncertainty that created this fear. I know that it's simple, and remember, simple things to do are simple not to do. It's simple what to do when you're in one of these interfering behaviors, is to stop. I will tell you this, and I mean it. There's no way logic or analysis will overcome that emotion of anger, fear, resentment, worry. There's no way you could out-logic it or analyze it. You can't go over it, under it, through it, around it, and you can't resist it. I spent years in law school and business school going, let it go, don't worry, don't worry. And I wake up saying, let it go. And then later in the day, let it go. It never lets go. But I tell you what does work, fucking stop. Breathe, drop down to center, relax, get at ease, and move back into the divine direction. I believe God gave us one free will, and it's to stop. The mind's going to tell you all kinds of bullshit. You just have to stop. I love Michael Singer, and I was listening to the other day. He has like 11 lectures that are in a series on Audible. Goes beyond untethered wisdom, untethered soul, and surrender. And he's like, here's the truth. If you want to quit smoking, don't put a fucking cigarette in your mouth. How hard is that? If you want to quit smoking, don't put a cigarette in your mouth. I guarantee if you don't put a cigarette in your mouth, eventually you will quit smoking. But yet, we'll buy patches and we'll do... Right? You're trying to what? Go over it, under it, through it, around it, lie to it, cheat it, manipulate it, deny it, resist it, instead of what? Just stop. Just stop. And if you can't stop, then forgive yourself and then stop the next time or shorten the distance of time that it takes you before you stop. Keep on, just stop. That's the only free will. Just stop. And then categorize things. Is this behavior aligned with where I want to be or better, or is it interfering with where I want to be or better? Notating, I don't understand evidence today. Even though the evidence appears contrary to where I want to be, it actually could and most likely is what? Getting me to where I want to be or better. That's the way God works. That's what faith is about. I'm being protected, promoted, loved, and perfected. I'm not omniscient, all-powerful, and all-knowing, but I'm loved by something that is greater than my mom. So even though I don't understand how losing everything, including my mom's house, is going to make me this unbelievable person who makes more money than ever, helps more people, and has more fun than I ever imagined, how could that possibly be? Because I'm protected, promoted, loved, and perfected, and I changed what? My thoughts, my perception, the meaning and behaviors, and the results started to occur. Not on my time frame, but on the infinite one. It happened really slowly, then all of a sudden. And then everybody says, oh, it's amazing the recovery that you made. No, it's amazing that I just stopped every time I had bad thoughts, bad perceptions, bad meanings, and bad behaviors. Just stop. Drop. Breathe. Mind, body, and soul are on fire. Stop, drop, and roll. Everybody knows what to do when they're on fire. Last question. Yes, sir.
This young lady mentioned earlier changing the calendar quite a bit. I spend a lot of time in that place. Today, especially, AI, books, podcasts, white papers, masterclasses, TED Talks, social media, we're bombarded with tips and information from trusted sources, right? How did you work through getting to your non-negotiables? What worked for you?
Yeah, so first of all, earlier on when we first started, I mentioned the remarkable thing about AI especially is that now knowledge is not power. Knowledge is a commodity. Anybody can gain knowledge immediately. It's the ultimate calculator of life. Whatever you want, you can not, it's wisdom. Wisdom is going to be the differentiator and behaviors aligned with that wisdom. And so how did I get my non-negotiables? I found people that sat in a situation by subject matter, topic, and expertise, and I asked them how to get to where they were by subject matter, topic, and expertise. And so as I started to aggregate these people that were where I wanted to be, for example, with health, then all of a sudden, I started to realize, okay, non-negotiable, minimum of an hour a day on my health, and seek the people. My friends are right here. Best decision I've ever made is to get someone who sits in. Look at this guy. He's older than me. He's unbelievable. I looked at him and I said, man, when I'm 10 years older, his age, I want to look that good this age. And his blood is even better than he looks on the outside. And so I was like, hey, Doug, you own Optimal Health. How can you help me? Well, you got to make health a non-negotiable, Dave. What does that mean? You got to assign time every day, 7 days a week. And we have a call every Friday because he's my accountability partner. And he asked me how's the workout? How's the focus? How's the supplements? How's the sleep? All the things that keep my heart beating. What can I do to help you? That became a non-negotiable. Same thing with sleep. I got a sleep coach 20 years ago. The same way I have Doug for my health. My number one non-negotiable, because it takes the most time, is sleep. I took the lady from MLB that got the Astros to win every single road game, Dr. Meeta Singh, and I'm like, tell me about sleep. It's a third of my life, and I guarantee I'm not very good at it because most people go to sleep at night and wake up more tired. That's like eating tonight this place and telling me you're starving when you leave. But we would think something's wrong with the food if that happened. But nobody wakes up tired and says, something must be wrong with my sleep. It's a third of my life. It's for recovery and access, two of the most important things to performance to help me. All of a sudden, what? Sleep's my number one non-negotiable because it takes the most time and it has the most impact. family was obvious. I was just doing the family thing wrong because I was putting family first before what? My sleep, before my health, and before my faith. When all those things make me better, so what? I can help my family. If I sleep right, I take care of myself health-wise, and I have strong faith, my family will take care of itself. I can't give what I don't have, and I have so much more because I sleep non-negotiably, I'm healthy non-negotiably, and my faith is unwavering. And they watch me the same way I watched my mom. I did not, till the day she died, listen to my mom. Thank God. With most of it. When business advice especially. I wish I would have listened to her on the life advice and parenting advice. But I watched her. I emulated her. I watched her, and I'm so grateful that I got to, for 58 years of my life, watch her and emulate. Today, you get older, I'm like, man, now I see what my mom did right and the few things she did wrong. And it's so easy to fix. You know what my mom didn't do? She didn't take care of herself when all she wanted to do was take care of others.